She has been criminalized for doing search and rescue. This was all the way in 2019. And she wouldn't say, and Sean Binder, who we spoke to for this documentary, wouldn't say that, I don't want to speak for them, that they are smugglers. But those are the charges that they're facing. So it's really a way to take back control of search and rescue and perhaps also remove any witnesses. But obviously, since that has happened, it would seem that this forced expulsion has become really, really common, and looks, in, you know, very much like a policy. The repetitive nature of it looks like a policy, and there's a clear time, 2020, when this really begun, and the criminalization also of humanitarian workers also begun. And that's not to say that forced expulsions didn't happen before then, but the scale is really quite is dramatically bigger.
That was BBC producer Lucille Smith speaking about the 2024 documentary Dead Calm, Killing in the Med, which has led to Greek prosecutors opening a murder investigation of, quote, unknown perpetrators. We'll link to the film. That does it for our show. Happy News Year. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Emily Harris and Lee Vandervoo of Uplift Local. They're rolling out a project of grassroots news innovation that centers reporting about local communities by community members. Do I have that straight? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, what is Uplift Local?
Uplift Local is a new nonprofit news organization. It was designed after 3 years of research, actually, because we knew that local news was really cratering around the country, struggling financially. The model wasn't working anymore. But Lee and I and our third co-founder, John Schrag, didn't really know what that meant in Oregon and in this region. So we did a ton of research. We raised a little bit of money. The Oregon Community Foundation supported us. We raised some money from the community. We worked with the Oregon Values and Beliefs Center and, you know, talked to, I say in air quotes, connected with in one way or another, a survey, a one-on-one interview, a focus group with 3,500 people around Oregon and Southern Washington. And what emerged were local news values and needs that we actually hadn't exactly anticipated. And so we shaped Uplift Local out of that. And it's designed basically to empower communities with trusted, accurate local information.
And I definitely want to dig into that a little bit more later in the hour. I wanted to also ask you, I mean, you just touched on this, but the word I've been hearing people even talk about even today, that phrase is news desert. What is a news desert? You touched on it, but can we even be more specific about it?
Sure. I think a news desert, I think colloquially, is a place with no local news or information. And something that we kind of dug in on a lot in our research at Uplift Local was that, you know, even when a community has some local news and information, there may be segments of the community that aren't served. And so that's something that we're really focused on is reaching people who, it's not just about place. I think when we talk about local news desert, we think place. This is a place that doesn't have a newspaper or radio station or a TV station. But really, sometimes the information that's available to a community isn't available in the language that it needs to be, or may just be completely culturally irrelevant. So we're looking at that too.
I was just listening to an interview with the media critic and analyst Paul Farhi, and he was talking about when you look at who won the presidential race, you could see that in communities where there was no local media, those were the communities where Donald Trump was elected in a landslide. And Paul Farhi was talking about the numbers in terms of what communities have one media outlet versus what communities have none. And long into short, just about half of the counties in the United States have only one media outlet. And that means that fewer than half of the counties in the United States have, you know, enough media around to actually help educate people with the differences of opinions. And I mean, I wanted to put this to you. I know you're both aware of this work, and later in this hour, I want to talk about what work you've been doing before you got to this place. But in the long term, what do you think is the impact on society when there's only one media source or no local media source?
Yeah, I think that study does look at counties because it's such a definable, you know, space that it's a useful tool for research. Medilda at Northwestern University,
there you go,
who runs that study, I think had actually been at a different university in North Carolina before that. And it's, I think they do it a couple, they've done it at least a couple of times. So I think what Lee was talking about is really important, that there's a lot of different types of news deserts, and some are geographic. There just is no news that like an organized, you know, news organization with reporters and journalists. But this question of whether the news, if you have it in the location you live in, is relevant and accessible to you is actually a question that does not get a ton of examination with that phrase news desert, but it's really important because there's nowhere where there's not information. There are Facebook groups. There are neighbors in the grocery store line. There are people that you talk to at work, right? So there's information being traded about communities and what's going on everywhere. So that Medill study is really looking at a formal news organization, but people get information lots of different ways. I mean, the leg up that journalism has so many kinds of information is that it's a, you know, there's professional practices, there's standards that go about checking whether things are accurate, that it doesn't repeat unsubstantiated rumors. I mean, there's a broad swath of players in the field called media. So when I say things like that, I can't say that speaks for everyone, but there is a professional sort of center. So that's the kind of stuff that the Medill study is looking at. But when there's not any kind, when there's not information that's even relevant to you, even though it's like being published, that has an effect of making people feel like they're not necessarily part of the community. So it erodes that power that a community can have when it's very rich and people are, you know, knowledgeable about the same things.
I was really privileged yesterday to interview Madeline Baer. She's the founder of what's called El Tímpano, which is a project that has emerged in Oakland, California, where her project, they did similar things to what you're doing here, and I want to get into those details. But what I started paying attention to El Tímpano, which actually does the same thing. It empowers people from their local community to cover their own issues. But it started out really with the team at El Tímpano reaching out to communities. They literally identified in Oakland the fastest growing communities were Spanish speaking and Mom speaking. That's Mayan indigenous language, Mom. Those were the fastest growing communities in Oakland, but with no media currently serving them. And when I started paying attention to them, it was during COVID. And they basically reached out to communities and asked them questions like, how do you get the news? And what do you really want to know? And what they found out through, like you have been doing, engagement processes, they found out that almost everyone gets their information from phones, from cell phones, because they can access them anywhere when they're at work. But also, people were freaked out because they could not access information about COVID. You know, what's the real information about it? And it became literally, I'm going to say, a matter of life and death. And so I want to come back to Uplift Local. What motivated you all to start that here?
Some of the same things. I mean, Madeline and her colleagues are doing great work in Oakland. We know those folks. They're part of a community of people who are really kicking the tires on solutions to the kinds of problems we're talking about and are learning and sharing that knowledge with one another. And I think what motivated us is really, I think, a feeling that has motivated a lot of journalists to try new things over the last few years. It's a sense that the way we've been doing things isn't working. A lot of people are just not getting the information they need. Misinformation is more prevalent in society. And I mean, to respond to the question you asked a moment ago in a little more details, you asked, what do you think the effect is on society? And one thing that I'll add to that is, like, we know from social science that the type of media that Emily describes, like the very fact-based sort of central media organizations, when people don't see themselves represented by that kind of an entity, we know that civic engagement really falls. People who don't see themselves in the news, they don't go to public meetings, they don't meet their elected officials or join groups like Rotary. You know, they don't run for office. They're very unlikely to do that. And they're also, in cases, unlikely to vote. So I think you start to lose people from the fabric of society. And I would describe that as kind of what we were maybe organically seeing and not having great words for. And, you know, misinformation fills that void. And that was very concerning to us.
I'll just say one of the reasons that I wanted to start this was I felt very disconnected from my community when I was living in Portland and reporting nationally, especially during COVID, when I couldn't travel anymore. And so I was working a lot on the phone and this and that. And it gave me some time to really reflect on the power of local news. And then some of what came out in our research was that there's still actually a high level of trust among Oregonians for local news. And then other research that I was paying attention to showed that national news, if that's what you're paying attention to, hits our polarization buttons much harder than local news does. And that tends to be because so many national issues are framed through these political lenses that has just like, it's opposing camps, it's a binary choice, it's, you know, us versus them. And there's a fascinating experiment that went on looking at when local news concentrates on local issues, depolarization actually comes down. So I was doing a lot of mulling about the trust in local news, the power of local news, the connection it provides to a community, and still all the faults that it has and how it's not really, you know, it still has improvements to make. And that just kind of inspired me to refocus what I was paying attention to and start, you know, getting deeper into this project.
Were there any other projects that gave you ideas about it? Or was there anyone or anything that actually inspired you to do this? Because I just honestly, I don't hear enough people talking about how we don't even know how we're going to get news 10 years from now. We don't. And I'm just wondering, I mean, because this is a long way that you've come for this idea. Can you name any other projects or programs like this around the country that might also be inspiring to you or anyone else who's thinking of doing something like this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, actually, I feel like we're in this renaissance moment of local news and people experimenting and trying new things. There's a couple specific projects that we are actually very much directly inspired the newsroom that we've designed. I will talk about one, which is called Documenters. This was started in Chicago about 6 years ago. It essentially trains people and then pays them, not a ton, you know, minimum and a bit, to go to public meetings that journalists either can't get to anymore or never could cover anywhere. And yet decisions are being made at these meetings that impact people's lives. So that is a program I'm really excited about. We're going to start that as part of our pilot next year. And then what happens to the notes that people take at these meetings is that the notes are publicly available, but more accessibly, we turn those notes into an engaging, informative newsletter that just is like, hey, this is what was going on your local officials this week. And it in the cities and areas that it's been tried, there's not a ton of rural areas that it's been tried in, but there's a handful. And it's got a great track record for developing civic engagement, becoming a pathway to journalism, creating people who are like highly informed sources in their community. So, you know, who like say you're at the grocery store and you're like griping about the planning commission and, you know, the person next to you is like, oh yeah, I went to that meeting because I'm a documenter for it. Here's what actually happened. And you just spread out the information. And so you have a much thicker fabric, a much more tightly woven fabric of community news and information. So that is one piece that we looked at specifically. And we're going to pilot here in Oregon for the first time. And then, Lee, do you want to talk about some of the other models we looked at?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so to the point of there being communities who don't have access to information in their preferred language, we were very concerned about that. Of course, we have a lot of Spanish speakers in Oregon. The area that we're going to be rolling out is the Columbia River Gorge, the reason because it struggles with that issue. And the fact that it is also rural and some of the materials just aren't culturally relevant across the community. And those are all the three issues that we really want to take on. So in looking at how do we get information across in more than one language, we look to a new service for immigrants in New York City, unhelpfully perhaps called Documented, not to be confused with Documenters. But the folks at Documented are just really developing wonderful expertise in how to access different types of audiences that are non-English speaking. So we've learned a lot from them as well.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Emily Harris and Lee Vandervoo of Uplift Local. They're rolling out an incredible project of grassroots news innovation that centers reporting about local communities by community members. Now I want to go back to the project that you're really going to be rolling out here in 2025, I think. Who will the journalists be that you're working with? Where will they be located? And what is their coverage area?
So the coverage area that we are bringing these services to are four counties in the Columbia River Gorge: Hood River County, Wasco County on the Oregon side, and Skamania and Klickitat County on the Washington side. We'll be getting the documenters program up and running first, probably start training probably toward the end of March, and hopefully start covering public meetings and getting our publication out in April. We partner with local news organizations to help with editing and help us figure out where it would be helpful to get coverage, you know, which meetings are important and what meetings their reporters can't go to. There are a handful of local news organizations still in that area, although it's declined, what was it? I think 71% the number of journalists in that area in the last 20 years, while population is, of course, has gone in the other direction. So that will be the first piece rolling out. And then the second piece is our Spanish language news service, which we can talk about a little bit more. And then, yeah, and then we've got a 10-year plan, Lisa.
I love 10-year plan. And I want to ask Lee about that in a minute, but I want to go back to the project that you are going to be rolling out in the spring. Who will participate with you? How do people do it?
So anyone can sign up to get trained as a documenter. You just have to be interested. And when we were in these four counties in November in a series of public events kind of introducing this idea, and I was just like so tickled by the number of people who were really interested in this and like wanted to sign up. There was a woman I met who had served for I think 3 years on the Columbia Area Transit Board, which coordinates transit, public transit around the gorge area. And she said she'd served for 3 years and at only two meetings did anybody ever show up. One was a citizen one time and one was a journalist another time. So documenters are not trained to be journalists. They are just trained to understand how public meetings work, how to take notes. They're not there to make a transcript. Some of the documentary programs around the country have made great use of AI transcriptions and have shared those as well. Sometimes local governments do that themselves already, so we wouldn't be duplicating that kind of work. But what the documenters do is, first of all, they bring a lens. They live in this community, so they've got some questions about what's going on, right? And then they are just basically what happened. It's also not like minutes, which I don't know if you've ever read the minutes of a government meeting, but they really don't tell you very much about what happened. There's no mention of discussion, or maybe it says like discussion happened and then there was a vote, right? So these notes are able to communicate a little bit more of the feeling of the meeting, what decisions were taken. We'll highlight things that seem to be most relevant. And again, taking that lens of the documenter into consideration. And so anybody can sign up to get training, and then assignments happen like as people, you know, are available and interested. It's not in any stretch of the imagination a full-time job, but and different places have practiced it differently. Often what seems to work well is, you know, if you're interested in doing this kind of stuff regularly, you might be particularly interested in, you know, what the port is up to. There's a couple of big ports in the gorge and they're all influential community players. And maybe you would go to that meeting over others. So you develop some expertise in that area. And then we, like I said, turn those notes into an email newsletter. There's, again, collaboration pieces with local news partners. But really if you're interested, then go to Uplift Local and sign up for our newsletter and you will get alerts when it's time to sign up for documenter training. And I will say some people might try it and find it's actually not their cup of tea, and that's fine too. But it's an opportunity.
And you want people from those communities, not necessarily somebody who lives in Portland who wants to drive out to the gorge. I just want to hope that crystal.
To be clear, people from these communities. That's right. That's right. We can talk about our 10-year plan in a minute.
Right. I have to come out and say this, that I had this boss, the best boss I ever had. And why he thought it was important that we should be at meetings is because then the public officials knew they were being watched. And that's not in a creepy stalkerish way. They knew that whatever they did would be noted. And it's just as important as the rest. I mean,
that is a huge piece of it. But, and there's a flip side to that that I think is a little bit less appreciated. The accountability is enormous, right? If you have somebody watching what's going on, writing it up, people are going to know about it. You know, that is a critical role that journalists have always played, and documenters take on that role as well. But there's a flip side too. A lot of government officials work really hard. Many of them can be volunteers, especially on community advisory boards and things like that. And if nobody pays attention to what they're doing, you know, that's also really difficult. You know, there's on the one side, nobody's watching. I mean, maybe you could get away with stuff, but on the other side, nobody's watching. Does anybody even care? So, you know, there's a lot of pros to having people watch what's going on at public meetings, both for that accountability piece and, you know, so that the people who are doing the work know that somebody cares what they're doing.
It brings a different level of ownership and engagement within communities, which I think is fascinating. So much of this stuff, it's not what you necessarily would think about on the surface.
You're right. It's culture.
Now, this is KBOO Community Radio. We broadcast into the Gorge. Is there a certain kind of person or people who you think would love doing this?
Curiosity is always a big plus for something like this. Caring about your community is probably the number one thing. Wanting to know what's going on and share it with other people, wanting to learn stuff. There's a lot of different people that can be really successful documenters and enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, you do have to sit through a public meeting. So if you really, you know, couldn't pay attention. So, you know, that's the main requirement. But, you know, we had a range of people at these informational events that we had. They had a range of ages, a range of backgrounds, a range of length of time that they've lived in the Gorge. Some of them were like, hey, this is my new community. This seems like a really great way to get involved. Others were like, you know, we used to know so much more about what the local government was doing. I really missed that. I want to bring that back. I am in conversation with the Columbia Gorge Community College to see if we could build some internships, some work study, potentially class that might bold into this. May also be talking to high schools to be able to do that as well. High school civics or government classes, whichever they're called now, social studies. So that, but the main thing is, you know, this is, you know, how government interacts with people, like what is going on in your community. Those are the kinds of things that are helpful drivers for people to be documenters. I will say too, you know, like I've made it clear, you're not being trained as a journalist. But documenters has proven to be a good pipeline for a lot of things in other communities. One is a pipeline to journalism. And then, so Uplift Local is planning to be able to provide further training and opportunities, you know, if that comes out of our documenters program, that interest among documenters. And also just, I mean, some people have, like Lee mentioned, run for office because they've understood how government works by being a documenter. They've started nonprofits. You know, there's just like a lot of ways to become further engaged if this is your entry point.
In a minute, I want to talk about your backgrounds, both of you, and also our colleague who is not here with us right now, John Schrock. And I'm going to brag about you, so just get ready for that. But the secret sauce, really, when it comes to community journalism, when I was growing up, I mean, 50 years ago, my town, it was just kind of a funky little town. But not only did they have a daily newspaper, but in that newspaper was always a section that was for kids. And they would actually have a kid, a teenager, who would help put it together and who would participate. And when I look back on it, now that publication doesn't exist at all. It's been absorbed into who even knows what, right? But it becomes a center for civic engagement, as you were already talking about. We've talked about civic engagement. We've talked about, too, how so much of the things that really matter in your local community are things discussed in hella boring meetings. I said it. Meetings that are so boring, people just don't even want to know that they happen. But then 6 months later, here comes something rolling out in their local community. And if they had any idea that elected officials, public officials were openly discussing this, but it doesn't matter, like you said, if no one's there to cover it. But I want to walk one step beyond that and ask you this. What about innovation? When you start giving these basic tools of how to gather information, which is what you're talking about, how to analyze the information and then share it, That's the that's the petri dish where innovation happens. I mean, could you just talk about that a little bit? What would you love to see come from this in 5 years or 10 years? Okay, that's it. I'm talking about the 10-year plan. What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think just with the advent of the internet, we've seen lots of people like, right, who've become information purveyors, some purveying false information and some purveying, you know, very firsthand information that nobody's going to get anywhere any other way, especially like in remote areas or people where, you know, places where a news organization might not be paying attention. But yeah, I mean, a ton of things could grow out of this. I mean, what if just strictly, I'm just going to just strictly only talk about documenters right now, right? But like, so what if this became, all of these four communities became, the school boards were covered regularly by juniors and seniors in high school, and the whole, you know, tone and lens of decisions made at the school board were through the lens of people who were in school, which I know that, that is definitely a lens that people are considering when they are school board members, right? But if somebody's there and documenting that and keeping that storyline going, keeping that thread of information going over time, maybe that becomes the norm of the feedback loop, you know, between the, to inform decision makers in the community. I mean, that's just one kind of example. Where, you know, we intend for our Spanish language news service to draw on these public meetings, information from them when it's relevant. And, you know, I mean, I dream of being able to actually have a documenters program that is fully bilingual as well. That's not going to be right off the bat, but that, so that, that creating of a fully inclusive community through shared information. And shared information, I just want to be really clear, Lisa, does not mean everybody agrees with each other, but the information that they're working from is the same. And so if there are disagreements about the information, you've got the same basis to discuss them. But, you know, what if that was really, I think we heard so many people say, like, there is information out there, but it's just hard to know where it all is. Some is here, some is there, some is somewhere else. Yeah, you can imagine a situation where you know you can get what you need to, you know, through this umbrella of news services from Uplift Local in partnership with other local news organizations. Could be a different kind of just sense that people know what's going on in this place.
Look, I love that vision. And I think when we talk about the, it's so hard to know where journalism is going, right? It's changed so much over the last years. And I think when we talk about it in our industry, when we talk about innovation, we have a tendency to talk about the past. We have a tendency to talk about loss. But I think sometimes what we don't talk about is the thing that I love most about all of this, which is the lower barrier to entry. You know, journalism, I mean, it just used to be such a gatekeeping industry. You know, there were people who controlled the narrative or had access to the narrative and others who just didn't. And you had to have a certain level of pedigree. You had to have, frankly, I think, certain experiences in life to be able to access opportunities as journalists. And what I love about all of this is that the barrier to entry is getting lower and lower and lower and lower. So when I hear Emily talk about our vision in the newsroom, the thing that it calls to mind most for me is that everybody plays, right? Like that there's space for all people to participate in this. It is truly where we're trying to go.
Something that occurred to me that I'm curious about. When you have gone to these events, what are people telling you? I mean, what are they worried about? What do they wish they had? What do they see in their future? All the people you talk about, have talked to in these communities.
They worry about all the things that all Americans worry about, right? I mean, I think we know as Americans the places where we feel unsure, where things are failing. And you know, I think, honestly, the most pressing issue on the ground is in communities is the fact that polarization has kind of filled the void where information used to live. when we talk about our work, we tend to talk about rebuilding a sense of place. And what we mean by that is like getting people to talk about what's going on with them and living again in community together and kind of shutting out some of this noise that comes home to roost in places where people aren't having conversations about what's going on in their lives and their communities day to day.
This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Emily Harris and Lee Vandervoo of Uplift Local. One of the things that gets me too is when we think about the places, most of the places that we get information now, you know, especially the places that we might, that are polarizing and the places that show us what we want to see, like Twitter, it's got a different name now. We've got Facebook, Instagram, there was WhatsApp. There's even some that don't even exist anymore. And there's probably one that'll be here next year that we've never heard of before. None of those innovations happen in newsrooms. That's what I love what you're doing. You're taking a few steps beyond. And you both, and then John Schrag, are just the essential newsroom people that I've always admired. I want to take this moment and, okay, now I'm going to do the thing. I'm going to brag about you. Okay. If you're listening right now, it's hard to describe how splintered somehow, sometimes, all of our news media has been in my lifetime, in the past 20 years, in the past 30 years. When I was saying, there used to be a daily newspaper in my hometown. There hasn't been for maybe 15 years or longer. And it's a suburb of the San Francisco Bay Area. It is not a small place, right? What I love to think about, Lee, Emily, and John, specifically doing this project, is that you three have, you don't just have incredible skills, but you've got the heart. You're coming at it, not because you want to make a lot of money like Elon Musk or anything like that. I'm not going to say you don't value money, but you're not motivated like that. I see you as people who have spent your journalistic careers trying to advocate for people who need an advocate. And I do want to take a moment and talk about you guys, because this is the most important and remarkable thing to me about Uplift Local. I'm going to start with Lee, right? The first time I ever met Lee, the first time I'd ever heard of you, Lee, was through the Society for Professional Journalists. It was the SPJ. It's the journalism club. Let's call it that. It's the journalism club of our town. And you used to publish a blog that was about, it was in support of people doing investigative reporting. You used to actually advise people who were journalists who were having a hard time pursuing stories because they couldn't get what they needed. They couldn't get the Freedom of Information Act requests honored the way they should. And you were always there, Lee. I've heard people say that you are the dean of investigative reporting in our area. And you've written a couple of books, fascinating books, at the Fish Market and As the World Burns. There's one right there. You spent years working at IS, an innovative thing, that basically you created a platform and a structure where you could actually investigate deep stories that emerged from local communities. And one that really sticks out to me was about what happens to the stuff that people take to Goodwill. Yeah. How does Goodwill work? This blows my mind when I think back on it. I mean, it had never even occurred to me, right? And now I'm going to shift over to Emily Harris, because when I first heard your voice, you were a foreign correspondent for National Public Radio. Then I saw where you were participating with Reveal, the Center for Investigative Reporting. Again, we're coming back to investigative reporting. You're not just a bunch of fluffy do-gooders. You know things. You've got very sharp tools. And here, I have to say this also about Emily Harris, and this might feel really obscure to a lot of people, but there was this incredible project called the Journalism Accelerator with this woman who was like she's like a supernova. Her name is Lisa Scooby. She's now moved on to do some fascinating work with Indigenous communities, which is amazing. But the Journalism Accelerator, all you did was look at how media works. All you did was look at data. It was database. Can I just ask you, Emily Harris, about the Journalism Accelerator? As far as I know, all the stuff you did, I think, is still online. Just talk about that one project, because that was hella innovative.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Lisa came at journalism not from a journalist's background at all. She came from a combination of marketing and also nonprofit stuff. And she wondered if there were ways to connect nonprofit organizations, advocacy organizations typically, but also organizations that had a lot of data and research with newsrooms. And it was, gosh, this must have been more than a decade ago. It was about the time when nonprofit news was just really taking off in the U.S. And there were a number of programs starting up like that have become quite mainstream in their communities now. I believe that was around the time when the Texas Tribune started getting up and running, Voice of San Diego, I remember. And we eventually got to the point where we were looking at what we could do to help new nonprofit newsrooms understand the ways to go about making money so that you could actually run a nonprofit newsroom. So there's grants, right? But grants run out and funders have, they change their minds about what they're funding. So the key piece was how to build community trust and community value so that communities would support this news effort and organization. So the accelerator was a place to trade information, focused eventually pretty specifically on that particular aspect. But you're right. I mean, I did come from, I've had a lot of background in international reporting. I learned Russian in public high school here in Portland, and that is what actually really helped launch my career as a journalist and my interest in learning things about other places. And one of the things that is most meaningful to me about this project we're doing right now, local, is that, okay, you know, I mean, I've covered wars where like bombs are raining down on your head. I've seen, you know, pretty tragic things. I've been in complicated situations. But I think one of the hardest jobs, the most sophisticated jobs, really, is to be a local news reporter, because you have an accountability to your own community that you do not when you are reporting from far away for a national audience. Like, for example, when I was in other countries, the people I would interview and the stories I would tell, they wouldn't hear those stories. And it's really different when you are accountable to your community, both like what you say and what you bring to light. Because one thing that goes on a lot locally is everybody knows what's going on, but nobody will talk about it. So taking that to the next level where you're like, okay, everybody's talking about it. What's actually going on? Let's set the facts straight. You know, that's a really tough job. So I've done a lot of different things. But the exciting part for me right now is that community piece, because I think that's where a lot of the power in rebuilding trust in journalism lies.
And briefly, John Schrag, who is the third wheel on this stool, couldn't be here today, but he was the news editor at the Willamette Week when they did the story that earned them the Pulitzer Prize. It was about a former Oregon governor, Neil Goldschmidt, who was a pedophile. And honestly, for decades, that was the hardest nut to crack in journalism in this area. And but they stuck with it. And eventually, they found a source and they did the story. And John wasn't at the Willamette Week when the Pulitzer Prize actually landed. He had gone over to Portland Tribune newspapers. And so I always thought that was a bit unfair. But the point I'm making, though, is that you three are, I'm saying it, you're the best and brightest. Maybe there's somebody out there we haven't met yet, and maybe you're going to find that person, or maybe you're going to create the microphone and put it on the table and somebody else is going to pick it up. But I wanted to go back to Lee, because, you know, in my heart, that you guys, you all have a depth of knowledge in local reporting, you do. And the investigative reporting piece, it's a very sharp and almost dangerous tool sometimes, because sometimes when you're doing this reporting, you can hurt people who are innocent people. And that, I mean, it's not easy. It's not something that just anyone can do. And I wanted to ask Lee, when we're talking about, you guys are creating a whole new idea really in our region for how local communities can learn about the world around them and also take part in it and take some control over it. I want to ask you, what are, as in terms of investigative reporting for local communities, what do you think are some of the most important issues that people face, or what obstacles they face? You were one of the first people
You and Nigel Duara were the first people who made me understand that Oregon actually has some of the very worst FOIA laws in the country. So can you just talk about that, specifically investigative reporting? What makes it so hard? And, you know, how can we do it better here?
Well, I think you just mentioned two of the things that make it really hard. And one is the legal circumstance that we're in the state. We really do have very, very restrictive laws when it comes to getting access to government information. And the other thing is, as you say, these are really sharp tools and you can do harm with them. And actually, it's quite terrifying, you know, to be on the other end of the knife and have to think about, you know, how to wield it correctly. And that is one of my greatest fears as a journalist, is that I will inflict harm on you know, someone who I meant to advocate for. And I think, like, I don't know, when we think about how that work might fit into this model or in the future, I mean, I think one of the things that is so, so very important in doing this work correctly is that it has to be grounded in community. It's just something that I've learned over the years and now feel kind of quite strongly about, really, is, like, you know, my best investigative pieces came to me because people needed these stories told and they chose me to tell them, or they felt that, you know, they had no alternative but to seek out a reporter because they were stuck and they couldn't affect change or, you know, amplify an issue that was of concern. And I don't know what those issues will be in the future. You know, it's like, and I think that is one of the problems of investigative journalism today, is reporters don't know what the issues really are. All we can do from some of the models that we have going currently is sort of parachute into situations and drop, you know, a big investigation and then leave, right? And I just don't feel that that is effective. I don't think that we have the trust and the buy-in with communities. And I think that our impact as investigative reporters is incredibly limited when we don't stay and we don't talk about the solutions or what comes next. And so, you know, I kind of think that the best journalists who are going to do this work ahead are people that we don't know yet. You know, we are going to build the microphone, we are going to leave it on the table, and we are going to see people march through these programs and become journalists in their own right and pick it up. And I think the great power of that work is going to lie in the fact that they are members of their communities and they have access to things that not all of us see. And they're going to, you know, raise the issues that are really, really important to them and to the people around them. I don't think it's any coincidence at all. If you look at, you know, the last few years of Pulitzer Prizes, you're seeing them won by these tiny news nonprofits that are building staff just this way, because they're getting at the stories that are truly important, as opposed to coming at investigation as if it's like, I don't know, some sort of mechanism, and you just pull a lever and a story pops out. You know, I think it's, if we're going to do work of consequence, we got to build it from the ground up.
Yeah, people have problems. They need solutions.
And people often need an advocate, especially when they're trapped in some sort of bureaucracy or a government situation. And I have to say, for myself as a reporter, the best stories I ever got were the stories that came through the front door. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think that the most important piece of equipment that a news outlet can have is a front door. We can't do that all the time anymore. But what you're doing is you're going to create a community of people. Each one of those people has a door. They might not be inviting everyone into their home, but you're creating anchors and connections within the communities, the local communities, where people really do need to have their stories told. And these are some of the stories that matter. And I'm going back to Lee's book, As the World Burns. I mean, I have a sneaking suspicion that it's possible that different kinds of climate change impacts might be among the most important stories in the year 2025 and moving forward. But I wanted to ask you, though, what do you want to be doing in 10 years? I mean, what is your baby going to look like? Your baby's going to be in school. I mean, this is a theoretical baby, a conceptual baby. What do you want to see happening 10 years from now?
I think half the fun is that we don't really know.
You know. So anything we say here, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to listen back in 10 years and see how wrong we were.
Yeah. I mean, you know, other people are going to start to enter this project and they're going to influence it in their own ways. And we really want that. You know, the doors is definitely open for people to come in, to train, to learn. We hope that documenters will help us surface folks who want to learn to be journalists and that we can train those people to have the tools. We really believe pretty strongly in training up people from communities, because one of the big things that we learn in talking with folks all over the state and region is that, the model that we often use to bring journalists into communities doesn't always work. We're using our farthest flung, smallest, most vulnerable communities essentially as training ground sometimes for professional journalists. And I think these communities often just need, that's not necessarily bad, but they often just need folks who are committed to living there first, as opposed to committed to learning to be journalists. And we want to create that pipeline. We don't know where folks will take it, but I personally am really enjoying the opportunity that I get through this project to speak on behalf of journalism itself and its value, be in a position to articulate that from a business side of the organization, which perhaps isn't a thing that's always there in our industry, and hope that the journalists will take it where it needs to go.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. We are going to, be piloting the documentaries and our Spanish language news service delivered via phone in the Gorge. And we'll see, we'll shake the wrinkles out of that. And we're also hoping to figure out how much does this actually cost per community and what are the right ways to find the funding. And so, I've actually already gotten an email from somebody along the coast who's like, can you bring this here? And, we'd like to figure out the blueprint. Every community is going to need this want this a little bit differently, but figure out a basic blueprint, replicate it and scale it, and then add on top a layer a layer of subject matter focused reporters so that they can, bring stories that might cross communities about environmental issues, for example, that might affect more than one community. And then that can provide stories to all of the different regions that would be following this news model.
I was going to say that the University of Oregon journalism school that's based here in Portland has an innovation center, the Agora Center. It's run by wonderful people that we love. And I was at one of their functions some years ago before COVID. And they would have these innovation events where they would invite people from all over the United States to come and just sit in a room and meet each other and talk about things. It's sort of the slow food movement of innovation. But one time, I have to tell you, this one time, there was an incredible discussion that was quite riled up. And at the end of that discussion, it's totally okay to cry. Everyone in the room agreed that maybe the most important thing newsrooms should do is give up some of their control to the community. This blew my mind. I'm always hearing people say, no, you've got to be objective. No, giving up control, that's incredible. That's kind of what you're doing. I mean, control is an illusion, my dad would tell you, but to be able to create a structure in a local community that's not heard enough, right? And then step back and let people take the microphone, take the paper and do what they think is right. You'll be there with rubber baby buggy bumpers, I'm sure, it's showing people how to fact check. But what you're doing is radical. I'm looking at you. You're radical. I know you and you're thinking, well, a little bit radical. No, but I mean, this is, to me, the thing that really killed newspapers is not really the internet. It's that, like you said earlier, there were so many gatekeepers, so many people at the top of these media outlets, whether it's newspapers, television stations, or what have you, radio stations too, who were all about just controlling a status quo. And I remember I worked at the Clackamas County News at Estacada in 1989.
Good for you.
Yeah, I know, right? It was pretty cool. And it was all about the spotted owl at the time. And I got to go on a
on a hike with the fish and wildlife person that was playing sounds of spotted owls and then just waiting to hear if they hooted back, right? Nice. But that person was really adamant that they didn't want anyone to know that we were out there, that they didn't want anyone to know anything about what was going on because they were afraid of being hurt, right? And some of these small communities, there's no way that someone who lived in the big city could even begin to understand the dynamics of that. It's more complicated than left and right, conservative and liberal, stuff like that. But when you create a situation where the local community can have a piece, they can let you know what they need, right? That's a big deal. That's a big deal. I just have to say, that's a big deal. What do you think is the most important thing that cable listeners should know about what you are doing, what Uplift Local is doing in the Columbia Gorge and four counties in 2025?
Well, we're piloting this documenters program for the first time in Oregon. We think it's going to be really innovative and amazing. We will be the second organization in the country to attempt to do it in Spanish. We will be the first organization to attempt the Spanish documenters program in the Pacific Northwest. We're going to be experimenting with other types of news reporting for our Spanish language community, and we're going to be kicking the tires on all kinds of deliverables to make sure that people get that information in the formats that they want. And, through the methods that reach them, you know, we want it to be easy for them to access the information and share it. And we also want it to be easy for them.